Jim Packard back with you on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about quirky and intriguing curiosities about our health. Anahad O'Connor of New York is a reporter for the New York Times covering science, health, immigration, and life in New York. For the past 2 years, he's been contributing the weekly column, Really?, to the paper's Science Times section, which readers know appears on Tuesdays. He's compiled many of the questions and answers into Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, published by Times Books Henry Holt and Company. Anahad, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
This book offers witty, straightforward, easily digestible pieces that neither taste like cough syrup or give you a headache. Or that's what I've been told.
That's the point of the book, absolutely.
How did you get the column started about 2 years ago?
That's a great question. You know, Science Times is known for its in-depth, often authoritative articles on everything from string theory to mad cow disease. Mm-hmm. But we also realized that there are a lot of kind of smaller, quirkier questions that people find puzzling and that kind of linger in their back of them, in the back of their minds. Old wives' tales and medical myths and rumors and things like that. So we decided, what if we took the same Science Times method and applied it to these quirkier questions that we all wonder about? And that's how Really was born.
And that's how it came to be. You must have had an editor who said, well, I'm not sure, but let's give it a try.
Yeah. I mean, it was something totally unconventional for Science Times. But
And who was that person?
That was actually my health editor, Erica Good. And we decided, you know, let's give it a shot. And it started off really small, and it started to catch on and snowballed. And as I was doing the column, I realized that a lot of times the kind of stories behind how these myths and rumors came about were just as interesting as the answers to them. And that's part of the reason for the book.
Well, we've mentioned the title of the book, Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, many, many times over the last couple of days, and so I guess the need to find the answer, should you never shower in a thunderstorm?
Well, actually, that was one of my favorite columns, because it's something that I always grew up hearing, and I thought it was just bogus, but that kind of illustrates the interesting part about the column, is that this was one of the claims that actually turned out to be true. There is some truth to it.
And so if you take a shower, you're what, going to be somehow in this line of electricity that's going to enter the house through the plumbing and then somehow come up the bathtub or the shower? Excuse me.
Yeah, the way it works is that when a building is struck by lightning, the electricity goes through that kind of lightning tower at the top, and it's conducted through the building. The building kind of acts like a cage. The electricity goes around you. But if you're in the path of that electricity, let's say you're, you know, washing your hands at the faucet, or you're, you know, in the shower and touching the faucet head, that electricity can actually be conducted through the that metal conductor. It's very rare, but it does happen. studies show that it occurs, I think something on the order of like fewer than 20 people a year are actually shocked this way. But it does happen, and it's mostly in smaller buildings and houses in the Midwest, and usually in a building that's not properly grounded.
Mm-hmm. Talking on the phone give you the same sort of problem in a lightning storm?
Yes, it's basically anything. If you're touching anything that can conduct the electricity, whether it's a faucet or, you know, a telephone that's connected to the wall, then it can happen. It's very rare, but it can happen.
You have broken these stories into various categories, including human nature, sex, 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 survival of the fittest, eat, drink, be merry, toxic planet, germs, 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 mother's medicine, bad habits, modern times, the great outdoors. So there's something for virtually everybody in here. And one of the questions I guess I had is that you always have heard this phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Did you examine that myth or claim?
That one's actually on my list. That one is coming up. It's we didn't do that one in the book, but it is one that I'll probably tackle soon in the column itself.
Mm-hmm. And are ab machines the best way to build a firm six-pack?
You know what? Most people think it is. And if you watch late-night television, I mean, it's so easy to see these, you know, infomercials advertising these, you know, $50 ab crunchers. But the truth is they don't really work. You know, there's a layer of abdominal fat that actually you have to burn off. And they've done studies showing that actually a very simple crunch done without a machine is actually better because it isolates the abdominal muscles. So that $50 can be better spent elsewhere.
Anahad, you have a most unusual first name. I do not believe I've ever run across another one like that. What is that name? Where does it come from?
It's actually from Sanskrit, believe it or not. It's the kind of name that you hate growing up, and then once you're an adult, you like it because you appreciate the fact that it's unique. But it's also interesting as well because as a writer, you know, a lot of times people will see my name and my byline, and they'll assume when they say Anahad O'Connor that the first name is Gaelic.
Gaelic, I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah, that's what most people assume, but it's actually from Sanskrit. And the other thing they assume is that it's that Anahad is feminine, so they assume that I'm a woman. So I get all these emails that start, "Dear Miss O'Connor," and then ask me what part of Ireland I immigrated from. So.
And you're from New York? Are you native there?
Yes, born and raised in New York.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been working for the New York Times?
Oh, I've been working for the Times for the last 7 years or so.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join this conversation with Anahad O'Connor about the claims that he's investigated in the book Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, which is published by Times Books, you can call us in Madison at 263-1890, otherwise 800-642-1234. If you have been given a tale by your mother, grandmother, or something, this is family lore, here's a chance to check it out with somebody who actually does this for a living, and we can take care of you. Again, 263-1890 in Madison or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Is male pattern baldness inherited from your mother's side of the family tree, or is it from the father's side?
That's a great question. And this is one of these old wives' tales that we all hear, and we assume, you know, it's bogus, and most scientists will say, yeah, it's probably nonsense. But they've actually done studies on this, and they found that it's not bogus. It turns out that there's actually a gene that's inherited by men from their mother's chromosome. So what they've done is, as everyone knows, women have two sex chromosomes, an X and an X, and men have an X and a Y. And they found that this X chromosome actually has this gene that significantly increases the chances of balding. And of course, if you're male, your X chromosome comes from your mother's side, and the Y comes from the father's side.
Mm-hmm. So there you get the answer.
And there you have it.
Another question about human nature is whether identical twins have identical fingerprints.
This is also a bit of a puzzling question. It's something that, you know, we all know that identical twins share so many traits. You know, they look exactly alike. You know, they are just almost indistinguishable. And this is something that you would think that they have the same, you know, fingerprints like everything else, all these other traits that they share. But actually, fingerprints are, you know, exactly like snowflakes in that no two are alike. And it turns out that our fingerprints are actually, we develop them in a number of ways. They're affected in utero by the way that amniotic fluid swirls around the fingertips. They're affected by, you know, this unique environment in utero. And so each person is actually born with very unique fingerprints, whether they're identical twins or not.
Are you right-handed or are you left-handed, Anahad?
I'm a righty.
Do right-handed people live longer than left-handed people like myself?
This was a question that I thought was pretty interesting. There were a lot of studies early on that showed that, you know, when they studied righties and lefties in the population, they started to notice that the number of lefties dwindled with increasing age. And, you know, a lot of scientists assumed, okay, well, maybe it's because we all live in a world that's designed for right-handed people. You know, we everything from the side of the road that we drive on to, you know, power tools, they're designed for right-handed people. But then they also noticed, as they looked further and further into this question.
Anahad, I've got to break in because we have to pause for the latest news. I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, and when we come back in a few minutes, we'll pick up the topic right there.
Absolutely.
Anahad O'Connor of New York, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard. 6 minutes after noon. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about quirky and intriguing curiosities about our health with Anahad O'Connor of New York, a reporter for the New York Times. He covers science, health, immigration, and life in New York, and for the past 2 years, he's been contributing the weekly column, Really, to the paper's Science Times section, which readers know appears on Tuesdays. Many of the questions and answers have been compiled into Never Shower in a Thunderstorm. It's published by Times Books, Henry Holt and Company. And again, Anahad, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And if people would like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Elsewhere, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Before we broke for the news and had to interrupt you there, you were talking about whether or not right-handed people live longer than lefties, and I think you were sort of giving lefties an out here as to why life could be so troubling for them.
Yeah, the bottom line is that lefties need not worry. This one came about because scientists noticed that as they looked at population studies, the number of lefties decreased with increasing age. And they thought that maybe lefties were dying off because they live in a world designed for right-handed people, and so they were more accident-prone. But when they dug a little further, they noticed that it's actually because a lot of people start off as lefties and then are pressured to become righties as they get older.
Do you think that that still holds true today, that left-handed children are encouraged to become right-handed?
I think it certainly happens, but not as often.
Mm-hmm.
But I've certainly heard stories from people about going through school as a lefty and having the nun or someone stand over them with a ruler and saying, learn how to write with your right hand.
Yeah, well, that was my mother. She was left-handed but had to learn to write right-handed and had beautiful penmanship. I'm left-handed and have been so since I was born and didn't have that pressure to change.
I think you might be one of the lucky few.
I see that in the book, though, 5 of America's last 11 presidents were left-handed, even though they make up only 10% of the American population. So I guess that in some cases it's good to be left-handed.
Yeah, it seems like there might be some other advantages to it.
You also check on the theory that whether or not our eyes change color as we age. And I guess that for some people that's true.
Yeah, there are actually some people whose eyes do change color as they age, and there's also a condition known as heterochromia, in which you can have two different color eyes, and there are a lot of celebrities who have this. David Bowie, for example, has two different color eyes,
mm-hmm.
and it can be caused by genetics or more often by an injury to the face.
And I also see that some medications taken for eye conditions can actually alter the color of the pigment of the eye.
Yes, that's also another one of the most common causes of it.
When we look at the section of this book on section number 2, sex, I suppose we might as well bring it up. Is chocolate, then, an aphrodisiac?
Well, you know what? Chocolate is something that many people consider one of the more sensual foods. And when scientists have looked at it, they've seen that it actually contains a lot of chemicals that have sexual effects. But when they actually look at this in people, they don't really see that translated into many effects. And they think it's probably because these chemicals are in such small amounts in chocolate that it's not enough to actually have an actual effect on the human body.
And are bald men more virile?
This one came about because studies have shown that higher testosterone levels can actually lead to baldness, which is, if you ever notice, one of the side effects of steroid use,
mm-hmm.
is baldness. Your hair starts falling out. But studies actually show that it's more a result of oversensitivity to testosterone in the scalp, more so than higher testosterone levels. So the short answer is no.
In looking at the section on survival of the fittest, is that gym membership really worth it? Does exercising on an empty stomach burn more fat than exercising after a meal?
Well, it has been shown to have a slight effect, but the end result is that you end up your workouts end up being shorter. So at the end of the day, it doesn't really make a difference.
But it does in terms of the length of the workout.
Yes. So it actually might do more harm than good.
Do you put on more weight when you eat late at night? In other words, when one of those late-night TV shows is on and you're snacking, what is that doing in terms of your weight on a long-term basis?
Well, this is something that I think a lot of us hear. I always heard this growing up. You know, you're not supposed to eat late at night, after 10 o'clock or so, as if, you know, this is some magic hour where suddenly your metabolism slows down and anything you take in will have a greater effect. But studies have actually shown that a calorie is really just a calorie at any point in the day. But people who do eat late at night tend to be overweight simply because they're gorging on junk food and other foods that are high in fat. And usually it's because they eat less in the day, and then by the end of the day, they're actually hungrier, so they're more likely to eat the first thing within reach.
Anna Head O'Connor is our guest, and talking about his book, Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, published by Times Books, Henry Holt & Company. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. You had an inquiry about whether or not green tea can help you lose weight, and I'm interested to get your opinion whether you're having to study these new water-fortified drinks, which actually have a weight loss claim associated with them.
I mean, the short answer is more often than not, they don't really do the trick. I mean, studies have shown that it really comes down to, you know, having a balanced diet. And a lot of these drinks actually are very high in sugar and high fructose corn syrup, so they actually do more harm than good. And these substances that they claim, you know, can help you burn fat, usually they're in such small amounts that they're not going to have an effect.
Okay. Let's go to Chris in Madison and see what's on Chris's mind. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got actually two questions. One I just thought of. One, I've heard that high fructose corn syrup has to break down through being fat. And then the other question, and is that true? And then the other question is, let's say it's destined that I'm going to eat a whole lot of calories, an entire box of Oreos.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, if I eat them all at once, will my body be able to pick up all of the calories that I've given it, or will it ignore a bunch of them?
I missed the first part of your question.
High fructose corn syrup to break down, I've heard that it has to pass through being created as fat first.
Okay. That's something that I've looked at, and studies have tried to actually examine that, and they haven't really found too much truth to that. I mean, it's basically just high sugar, and it's, you know, very high in calories, and so it'll have, I mean, a pretty bad effect at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And your second question about overdosing on Oreo cookies, I mean, generally it makes obviously more sense to kind of spread that out. But, I mean, studies have shown that when you ingest that high amount of calories, I mean, your body tends to store that up. And so it's just going to turn into fat.
So if there's a zillion calories that I'm going to eat, if I'm going to pick up a million calories in my bag of Oreo cookies, my body will grab every single one of them. It's not going to be able to, I can't overwhelm it.
Well, the vast majority of it is going to, your body's going to try to use what it can, and then the rest is going to store it as fat.
Okay.
So.
Okay, and then the thing about the high fructose corn syrup, it's basically just sugar. It's no better or worse for you than straight sugar.
No, it's not.
Okay, so if I had two products that both had equal amounts of high fructose corn syrup or sugar, then there's really no differential health difference.
Pretty much, yeah. At least according to studies, what they've shown.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Chris, sure. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to join in, lines are open in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Is breakfast really the most important meal of the day?
This is something that I think has been around for certainly several decades, if not even longer. And, you know, most of us probably just, you know, kind of shrug it off as a claim or a marketing gimmick, you know, that cereal companies have come up with to help sell products.
Mm-hmm.
But studies have actually looked at this and found that people who do eat breakfast each day, or at least a healthy breakfast, end up having lower rates of cancer and other health diseases than people who avoid eating breakfast.
That's very interesting.
So there's actually, it seems like there's something to it.
Yeah, it would seem that way. How about eating fish? Is it really good for the brain?
Absolutely, because they're high in omega-3s, which is the most healthful kind of fat there is. And, you know, studies have looked at people who eat fish and people who don't find that, you know, it has effects on all sorts of things, from your lifespan to your risk of Alzheimer's disease.
You list the best fish, in according to a study from Environmental Defense, the best fish to eat and the worst fish to eat. And on that best fish category would be such things as crabs,
mm-hmm.
Oysters,
mm-hmm.
shrimp, striped bass if they were farmed, tilapia.
Mm-hmm.
What are some others that you find that you enjoy in that fish category that are good for you?
Personally, for me, it would be salmon and tuna.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the caveats of eating fish, is that you really have to find a balance between, you know, the fish that are higher in mercury, and usually these tend to be the fish that are kind of at the top of the food chain in the ocean, like shark, for example, are going to be high in mercury because they're eating, you know, all this fish and animals that are below them, and so that mercury kind of accumulates up the food chain. And so you got to look for fish that are high in omega-3s and low in mercury. And I provide a list in the book that gives you a pretty good idea. And personally for me, I like salmon and tuna.
Okay. Brian and Madison, let's give you a chance. You're on the air.
Thanks. I have a question. We had a disagreement the other day. A coworker told me that he felt that drinking cold water, that your body would not be able to hydrate from cold water as well as room temperature water. And I'd never heard that before, and I dismissed it, but I was curious if anybody knew.
This is something that I actually have looked into, and the way it works is that your body will absorb warmer water faster because it's closer to your body temperature, but it's not really going to have much of a difference. I mean, either way, your body's going to make use of that water, and if there is any impact, it's very, very slight.
Okay. Thank
All
you.
Right. And how about, is bottled water cleaner than what comes out of the tap?
I mean, I think most people believe that it is, and there's certainly evidence in that, in the amount of money that Americans spend on bottled water each year. I mean, we certainly pay a premium for bottled water, but a lot of studies have actually shown that oftentimes it's what the water that comes out of your tap is just as clean, if not cleaner, than bottled water. Because most cities have tight regulations on how their water is treated. It has to be tested very frequently, you know, treated with, cleaning agents. And a lot of times, bottled water manufacturers are subjected to much looser regulations.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Tom in Sherwood next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm wondering if brown sugar is any more healthy than refined white sugar.
Brown sugar is slightly healthier. I mean, most scientists will recommend that you limit your intake of both, but they basically, when they tease apart the differences in studies, they have shown that it is slightly healthier.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much. And let's go on to Anitra in Onalaska next. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I didn't hear the first part of the show, so I didn't hear if it's safe to go in the shower during the thunderstorm. But my real question is, what about the indoor water parks and stuff? Is that safe?
In terms of...
Well, people go to the indoor water parks because it's storming outside and they can't go in the ones outside.
Mm-hmm.
But can they go in the ones that are inside in the indoor swimming pools and stuff?
Actually, those are... There have been documented cases of people being electrocuted during thunderstorms when they're at these outdoor water showers. And, I mean, that's because they don't really protect you from lightning, and because they also, you know, will expose you to these, you know, metal faucets, so you're at just as much of a risk.
But if you were indoors, and this water park were an indoor-covered, protected area, then about the only thing you have to worry about is the grounding, do you not?
Yeah, as well as the plumbing. The electricity can be conducted through the plumbing.
It still can.
Yeah.
Thanks. I've never gotten a straight answer to that yet.
All right, Anitra, thank you very much for the call. Let's give Mitch in Green Bay a chance here. Hi, Mitch.
Hi. I just had something to relate to that. One is that the plumbing system is part of the grounding system in the house and all underneath almost all codes. And so, therefore, if you take a shower or grab onto a faucet or put your hands in a sink of water, you're getting yourself in the conducting system that is to be the safety part of the house. And you can, when that system is overwhelmed, you can be hurt because the high power of lightning, it can overwhelm the system and it can hurt you.
Okay.
Now,
absolutely.
The second question, I have a question here on fish. I understand that salmon and catfish that are raised on these farms have little or no omega-3 in their system and therefore are the same as eating beef and or any other ruminant. And I'm wondering if this is true for all the farmed fish or what?
Well, studies have shown that generally farm fish is not going to be as good for you as the other types, for a number of reasons, but they still do have omega-3s, and that's just because of the way the body composition of the fish. Naturally, they have these omega-3s to keep them warmer in colder waters, so there's still definitely going to be omega-3s.
Thanks very much, Mitch, for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. As we continue talking with Anahad O'Connor of New York Times, the author of Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, it's published by Times Books, and we've been talking about some of the questions and answers that he provides in his weekly column, Really, which is found in the science section of the New York Times on Tuesdays. Let's talk about germs for a minute. Does antibacterial soap really work better than regular soap?
This is something else that I think a lot of Americans tend to believe in. You know, much like bottled water, there's a whole industry of antibacterial soaps. And, you know, we spend sometimes $4 or $5 on these products at one time. And the truth is that studies show that it really doesn't have that much of a difference than just plain old regular soap and water. A lot of times all it really does is just serve to rinse the bacteria off your hand, and that's exactly what plain old Ivory soap will do as well.
Okay. And can echinacea really help you beat a cold?
This is one of those questions where it's a little bit of yes and no. If you come down with a cold, taking echinacea is actually not going to help you out at all. So it's not going to help you beat a cold. But if you take echinacea regularly, without taking too much, that is, then it can actually help bulk up your immune system and help you prevent future ones. But, of course, they're like any supplement or drug, it can have severe side effects. So it's very, very important not to take too much echinacea.
How about chicken soup? Is it really good for a cold?
Yeah, this is in New York what we like to call Jewish penicillin.
Sure.
I think we've all grown up hearing this one, and I always thought it was just bogus. But scientists have actually looked at chicken soup and found that there are certain chemicals that can actually help bulk up your immune system and actually help you beat a cold. So chicken soup really does have some cold-fighting properties.
Your mother probably said to you, Anahad, you've got to sit up straight.
Absolutely. Sit up straight. You know, don't lean back. Don't hunch. It's, you know, a matter of just manners and also, you know, concerns about what you're doing to your back. But, you know, a lot of studies have looked into this and found that sitting up straight is actually not that good for your back. The ideal position is kind of a reclining position. And they've been able to prove this by having people sit on chairs in large MRI machines, and they can look and see how much pressure is exerted on the lower back. And when you sit up straight, you're putting a lot of pressure on your back, and that's why you may notice that it kind of takes effort to sit up straight, because it's not your body's natural position. And so it's better to actually recline a little bit, and that takes some of the pressure off your back.
How about reading in the dark? Does it damage your eyes?
Well, for me growing up, this was probably the one time when my mother would scold me for reading, was when she caught me at night with the flashlight to my book. But the truth is, it's really not going to do much damage to your eyes. It may cause some strain, but it's not going to make you or deteriorate your vision.
And how about heart attacks? I've often heard that they are more common on Monday morning than on any other day.
The truth is, yes, there is certainly a pattern of heart attacks increasing on Monday mornings. And most scientists and studies seem to suggest that it's because of, you know, this, our, you know, psychology. It's this kind of stress of going to work on the first morning after the weekend. And other studies suggest that it may have to do with, you know, binge drinking on weekends or overindulgence on weekends. But there certainly is a very well-documented pattern of a spike in heart attacks on Monday mornings, not just in the U.S., but in other countries as well.
How about birthdays? Are these stressful enough so that you're more likely to have a heart attack on your birthday than on some other day?
Yes, there's also a birthday effect as well. And, you know, it could be the stress of birthdays, just the kind of looking forward to it and maybe, you know, your expectations, you know, not quite living up to what actually transpires on your birthdays. I mean, it could be a number of things, but scientists have documented a birthday effect as well. It could just be the, you know, the stress of preparing for your birthday and, you know, all sorts of factors related to it.
And finally, is yawning contagious?
It most certainly is, and not just in humans, in other animals as well. And scientists have traced it to empathy, which, you know, of course, is being able to sympathize with others and put yourself in their shoes. Because they've shown that people with mental conditions that are characterized by a lack of empathy, such as schizophrenia, these people do not seem to find yawning contagious.
Anahad, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Anahad O'Connor of New York, the author of Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, published by Times Books. You can find his column, which is called Really, His Favorite Word to His Editor, in the paper Science Times sections, which readers know appears on Tuesday. Tomorrow, John Steyer, UW Madison Associate Professor of Horticulture and Turfgrass Specialist, will share tips on growing lawns. Our thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air phone production.